You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Sam.
And we're talking about hashtag shadow work today. Because it is a hashtag.
You brought this
to
me through text. And I have many thoughts. And I often start this way saying I'm going to let you go. But this time I'm really officially going to let you go. Okay. So you lead us in to this topic.
This has been something that's been on my mind. And I do want to, like, out of the gate acknowledge sort of my bias towards it, where I get very annoyed by spiritual – like, if you listen to the manifestation episode we did, I'm very clearly biased against a lot of, like, the spiritual workers and manifestation and all of the woo-woo stuff. And what I probably didn't clarify a lot in that original episode we did is I get very annoyed by it because I went through a phase and it was very intertwined with my eating disorder and addiction of thinking that spirituality and spiritual gurus would save me from my severe mental health problems. So I get very nervous for people when I see a lot of this stuff go viral, specifically last fall. I think a lot of her stuff went viral, but I think it happened even before then. Specifically, what I've been thinking about is there's a woman named Keila Shasheen. She is the one who you've probably, if you're on TikTok, seen her very, very viral shadow work journal. And shadow work is something that people, spiritual gurus and things like that, have been talking about for forever. And we're going to get into a little bit of the history of it and why it sort of gets lumped in with psychology. But yeah, I get very annoyed because I'm sure some people like Gabby Bernstein and I don't have a huge problem with her, but I was very wrapped up into like Gabby Bernstein and she did a lot of like weight loss stuff and a lot of these spiritual things become like, you have negative energy and that's why you're holding on to weight and, you know, you're not manifesting properly and that's why you don't have the job you want and you don't have the boyfriend you want and you don't have the house you want. And all of that starts to blend together and get really messy, in my opinion. And then people beat themselves up and feel terrible that they're not manifesting right, when a lot of times people – need therapy and they need mental health treatment and they may even need medication. Not everyone. So yeah, I mean, that is like my bias going in. I do have to say she does, you know, I was like re-looking through some of her TikToks and she does say if this work brings too much up in you, please see a licensed therapist, please see someone who helps you. But she also says that she is a certified sound healer and certified therapy practitioner. So I think that's extremely misleading. She's not calling herself a therapist, but she basically is by calling herself a therapy practitioner. So as always, we're going to get into the nuance of it. But I think, Sam, you're more open to spirituality than I am, where I just want to acknowledge my bias, like, out of the gate.
I have a hard time when the concept of shadow work is tied up into spirituality. And again, like, we really dove into this in the manifestation episode. So I guess at this point now, if you're wanting to get caught up, go listen to the manifestation episode that we did just a few ago. But what my concern with this is, there's a couple points to it. One, this just piggybacks off of the theme that we've been chatting about, which is this idea of these people that get a small chunk of information and they blow it out without the depth of understanding that is required to actually do this work, and just how individualized it is and the level of support that some people need getting through this. And they just get seven-figure paychecks and that's the end of that. And they have no obligation because they don't have any ethical board or any licensing board or anybody that ensures that they are doing things appropriately and safely and with the patient slash client in mind first.
Well, how great is it to just make a journal and not have to actually deal with the ramifications of what it takes, and you get to claim that you're, like, healing, you know, thousands of people, but you don't have to sit with them and actually help them unpack things.
Right. I hate how weak of a legal disclaimer that is to say, if this feels too heavy, talk to someone.
But it's sad that so many of them don't do that.
Right.
That
they don't.
That I literally was like, good job. Good job.
Yeah.
Because I saw some other shadow work coaches that don't at all, that talk negatively about therapy, that are straight up, yeah, like,
I guess that's a fair insane point. She doesn't have to say that. Because technically she's just an average person.
Yeah.
She has no licensing board. Like, you and I have to say that
she's
all
no
the time.
Training.
No, none.
But, and that is, I think, my big issue with spirituality too, is if you are a coach who is, like, a friendship coach or a career coach or even a dating coach or, you know, a wardrobe coach, like, you do something really specific, I think there is absolutely a market for that. And I think that's helpful because people, like, stay in their lane.
Right.
I think the problem with spirituality is it is so intertwined with psychology and mental health. And a lot of spiritual people kind of have, like, negative feelings about psychology and vice versa. And it creates this really murky place where there's a lot of self-blame that can start happening of, if you're not following with what I'm saying, it's your fault. And yeah, because it's spirituality, there's no boards, like you were saying. Anyone can say that they're doing anything without any training. And their biggest, a lot of them, their biggest sort of proof of concept is, well, I healed myself, which we say time and time again on this podcast, just because you got better or healed yourself, that is a sample size of one. That does not mean you can help other people.
Right. The other part to this, if we start branching out of the frustration that I have about the self-help and the coaching industry in general, and I'm also glad like you differentiated between, like, a stylist or someone helping you with your resume or even marketing coaches, right? Like, those are not the coaches that we're talking about. And I think we need to make sure that we differentiate that. What we are talking about are the self-help gurus, the spirituality gurus, the people who are like, I'm a mental coach.
Mm-hmm. I'm a trauma coach.
That is where, on the surface, they have great intentions, mm-hmm, right? But when you are talking about shadow work, and we're going to get into the depth of it and the complexity of it and what that all looks like, but just as an introduction, when you are talking about shadow work, that is code word, dog whistle, terminology, whatever you want to put to it, that we are dealing with very, very dark, frightening parts of yourself, mm-hmm, meaning your history of trauma, your deepest insecurities, your deepest fears, your deepest, darkest secrets, right?
Yeah.
Like difficult memories, you know, shame that you're carrying, whether it's about stuff that you've done or stuff that you've seen or things that you've been a part of. These are the heaviest parts of yourself that are often in the dark for a reason. Mm-hmm. And when those things just pop up to the surface, they don't pop up in a silo. Mm-hmm. It comes with emotions. It comes with triggers. It comes with reactivity. It comes with confusion. It comes with overwhelm, all of this. And if you are just sitting there with a journal that is prompting you to bring up like the most frightening parts of yourself, and you have no one around to help you understand why you're feeling what you're feeling in response to this, if you have no one that is helping hold your hand and guide you through it and give you perspective and insight over like, oh, I don't know if you should own that, or like, let's explore why you're owning that, or where is that from? What happened with that? But, right? Like all the exploratory stuff that happens in the therapeutic relationship, that is a recipe for disaster. And the way I use spirituality in my life is, for me, it is I like to tap into my higher power for a sense of comfort and a sense of support. I will look for little signs through my day, depending on the types of prayers that I frame or things that I say, right? Like, I'm not looking to have things fixed. I'm not looking to go outside of myself completely. It is a support system for me that brings me a sense of peace and comfort, that I'm not alone, that there's a higher plan, a higher purpose to what's going on in my life and things that I've been through and things that I'm trying to do. And that's where it ends for me. And I am in the same boat as you, that I think sometimes when we start talking about the woo-woo and flirting into that, if people don't have a trained professional to help them navigate that level of nuance and gray space, it becomes – that level of nuance and gray space, when you've never been in it before, feels so destabilizing.
Yeah.
You cling to sometimes the most rigid interpretations because they help make sense to it.
Yeah.
Because you don't have the skills to let your boat just kind of rock with those types of waves.
Yeah.
So even though you think you're sitting in that space, you're looking for certainty and clarity to get you out of it.
Yes.
And that then opens up for the more extreme. This is how people end up getting wrapped up in cults. And it is just such a dangerous slippery slope.
So for people that don't know, and honestly, unless you
went to school
and you were forced to learn about Freud
and Jung,
you probably don't understand even how it's all connected. But essentially, Jung was Freud's protege. Essentially, they worked together for a long time. If you don't know about Freud, you know, he was the one that was obsessed with sex and repressed memories. And he thought that all neuroses and psychological manifestations could essentially be cured by going back to people's childhoods and things like that. And Jung agreed with Freud on a lot of things, though Freud was kind of more fixated, like I said, on sexual repression. And what's interesting, though, is Jung sort of took a turn in – he became more spiritual, and that is sort of how spirituality and parts work merged. To Jung's credit, Freud was very into sort of like fixing people's mental problems. Like, he was very into, people are neurotic and I need to fix them, where Jung had more of an expansive view of – therapy or psychoanalysis is what this was, can also be a way of growth and, you know, being a better person and being a better version of yourself and being fulfilled, compared to Freud was very focused on just fixing what's wrong with people.
What was so drastic about what he was doing is he was the first person to just even talk to people, to just even ask them a question. In the 1880s, like, nobody talked about anything. They just kind of got up, lived their day, and went to bed, and then they died. Yeah. So Freud was in Vienna, and he started speaking with all of these women, and he would ask them these questions about, like, you know, their life and their childhood and their developmental experiences. So what Freud was discovering as he was speaking with all of these young women, because many parents would bring their daughters to him,
yep,
saying, like, why is she having feelings? Like, I don't understand. Like, she's having thoughts. So what he found was so many of these women were victims of child sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
He got so overwhelmed with it because he didn't know what to do that he stopped asking girls about it.
Oh, wow.
Because it was so overwhelming to him. And he was like, I don't. And he, as much as he would try to, like, fight it within himself.
Yeah.
He was like, there's no way they're all lying.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way every single one of these girls is having, like, the same hallucination.
Mm-hmm.
And so he just got so flooded by it and was like, this is clearly something that's, like, such a problem at, like, the systemic root of society that I'm going to have to hope this gets dealt with in the future. So just, like, an interesting anecdote to kind of give some background to, one, the problems that we're facing today as humans have been around for forever.
Mm-hmm.
Two, the, like, world of psychology is really 120-ish years old. Yeah, so Jung was his protege, and Jung really leaned into this idea of light versus dark.
Yeah.
He was really big into that, and this idea of, like, we held both, mm-hmm, which is
true.
True. That's, like, categorically correct. And that's work that I do with my clients. So I think from go, we're not sitting here saying there's something categorically wrong with this insight. It's that it's so deep and it's so heavy. It can't be simplified the way people would like it to be.
I would also say it's being bastardized.
Ooh, say more.
Like you were saying, I think that it has become TikTokified. Mm-hmm. It's become trendy. It is intersected with spirituality and manifestation and lucky girl syndrome and all of this stuff. And when I was going through TikTok today, I could see, like, a lot of people were talking about the connection between, if your manifesting isn't working, it's because you haven't done shadow work yet.
Mm.
Or if your life isn't the way you want it, you need to do shadow work, which isn't even wrong. But the way it's being presented is wrong, because I just hate that it's become a trend. Because on the surface, yes, like you said, like, looking at parts of yourselves, I mean – it's crazy because this is starting to happen. Gabby Bernstein's recent book is literally about IFS therapy, internal family systems. That IFS has just become, like, a new way where I think a lot of spiritual gurus are now going to talk about doing IFS work, even though they're not therapists, and that's going to continue this issue. But there's just so much there. And one thing that I keep thinking about too is, right, in the 80s, there was this whole idea of false memories. Mm-hmm. And we really understood what can happen when people are able to be suggestible, when they're doing trauma work, when they're doing deep work, when they're – I mean, hypnotherapy used to be a pretty big thing that is pretty discredited in the traditional sense. And it just shows a lot – it's really fascinating if you get into the history of memory and how memories are made and – how easily our memories can, like, be manipulated. And I'm not saying that, you know, everyone doesn't know their memories or things like that. But even if you look into, right, like, it's how our memories can change when we re-remember things in different contexts. And memory can be more fluid than we would all like to think. So then when you're adding in, yeah, like, shadow work, especially these very structured journals that I looked at some of the pages, in the journal because there were TikTok videos showing them. And some of the pages are like unbelievably specific. Like I took a screenshot of one. Like I always feel like I'm the blank one. Blank is how I manage to escape. Blank brings me peace. I'm so tired of blank and blank, but excited about blank and blank. I want to try to blank so I can finally blank. For some reason, I always end up blank. I deserve blank. Right? The goal of shadow work or trauma work or parts work is to help you look at yourself differently, acknowledge the parts of yourself that are, you know, negatively impacting you, to create compassion for yourself versus it's being, I say bastardized because it's being used as a like tactic to sell people things and to create an end result.
The fear is that there's a carelessness.
Yeah.
That is being passively implemented.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are thinking with their whole chest that they are doing good work, that they are helping people, that they are helping people tap into themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, that is true.
Yeah.
In some ways, people are being introduced to something that is genuinely helpful.
Mm-hmm.
They're only getting 25% of the support that they need, though.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of careless for these people who more often than not, when they went through these processes, had some therapeutic support, had some therapeutic guidance,
mm-hmm.
to then take this information and just shove it out to the public. And something that I, if I can be like really vulnerable right now, something that I have struggled with is I many times have wanted to make workbooks.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that's still in the back of my mind. It's something that I really, really want to do.
Yeah.
And I stop myself because of this fear of causing people harm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to myself, like, am I being the same thing that mm-hmm. I get upset at? Now, I think the difference is the workbook that I would put together would have much more depth in terms of how to cope and process and resources for support and how it could be utilized in therapeutic practice yeah. with a clinician. How to like work down from feeling triggered, like,
yeah.
And I think to kind of maybe wrap around to what you were saying, it's not that these things coming to the surface is wrong. No, no, no. Mm-hmm. It's actually what needs to happen. If mm-hmm. you want change in your life, if you want things to be different, if you want to think about yourself differently, if you want to make different decisions, you do have to tackle the insecurities, the doubts, the traumas, the things that are making you feel trapped, the things that yeah. make you feel stuck, the things that make you feel shame. You have to be able to acknowledge and hold space for those things in order to change. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is with the commercialization mm-hmm. of this information is that it gives you the illusion that there is an endpoint where these things will never bother you anymore.
Yes.
And what I have been adamant with in my work with my clients as we go through their individual journeys together is just because you've processed something once and you've worked mm-hmm. through something once does not mean in any way that it will never come up again.
Yeah.
In fact, it is inevitable. The things that you go through in your life, unfortunately, are stuck to you.
Mm-hmm.
The work that we do, if we're going to use the frame shadow work, right? If we're going to talk mm-hmm. about our dark parts, if we're going to talk about, you know, our shame and our mm-hmm. secrets, the work that you do is to make peace with the fact that they do exist.
Mm-hmm.
And that to be bothered by those things or to have those things come back up to the surface doesn't mean you haven't done healing work.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that everything that you've done so far is null and void because you experienced a trigger again
mm-hmm.
or something happened and all of a sudden you experienced it and you're like, oh my God, I never realized that that actually made me feel this way as well.
Yeah.
It's that is the inevitability of the human experience
mm-hmm.
that you will inevitably have struggle. You yeah. will inevitably have pain. You will inevitably have heavy parts of yourself. And guess what? Every single one of us right now, you listening to this, me, you, Amanda, we haven't yet gone through experiences that are going to add to our yes. shadows. Everybody is, till the day they die, you go through things that are just gut-wrenching and mm-hmm. destroy you and you have to figure out how to move through that. And so I think maybe even the bastardization and the commercialization of it is creating the illusion that there is a fix to never having those things with you again. Mm-hmm. And that if you simply fill out this workbook, you will never have to be burdened by these things again. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, with the way algorithms work, with the way marketing sequences work now, you have to have phrasing like that to sell something. You have to have this kind of like, here's the problem in your life and here's how this is the solution. And it has to be this really binary chunk to it. And so I struggle too sometimes because what I get flustered with is like, yeah, like this stuff isn't inherently bad. It's so frustrating that these people, because they have no obligation to anyone, because they are so convinced in their rightness, they get to have a carelessness to just throw it around to everybody and say, this is good for everybody. Mm-hmm. And you can do this right now. This work is the work you need to do right now. Mm-hmm. And that is where I get really spicy. That's where mm-hmm. I get really protective and defensive, because I'm like, I can think of even some of my clients right now that I wouldn't recommend doing that yet.
Yeah, you talk about flashbacks, you talk about PTSD, trauma, all of that.
You talk about
stuff.
The physical symptoms that mm-hmm. come up when you start feeling those things, lack of appetite, over appetite, not sleeping too much, like the nervous energy that comes up.
Yeah. And I think sometimes they can literally be like, your body is right. Like that can get like that. I get very spicy around anything like body wise, obviously, because of my history, where a lot of times, it's incredible how manifestation and spirituality always involve wellness, eating disordery stuff.
Yeah.
How you look is a physical manifestation of how you feel on the inside and your energy and all of that. And that's where I go insane, because I also think people forget that, and we're going to do a whole episode on like OCD and, you know, mm-hmm. impulsive versus intrusive thoughts and stuff like that. But like, I am someone, I don't have OCD. I have anxiety, and I have like, there's a spectrum between anxiety and OCD a bit, where, avoidance can make anxiety worse. We know avoidance obviously makes OCD worse. And as I talked about also in the manifestation episode, I have a, propulsion towards magical thinking, mm-hmm. not liking what I'm thinking that it's my fault if something happens, getting really fixated on certain things. And the problem to me also with manifestation is it starts being like you're responsible for your thoughts and your thoughts create your reality. And, the phrase of like every cell of your body is listening to the thoughts that you are thinking and you need to change your thoughts. And like a lot of people can't change their thoughts.
No.
A lot of people have intrusive thoughts. Yeah. I have random intrusive thoughts all the time. And the way you cope with intrusive thoughts is by not giving them energy and literally being like, great, you're here.
You accept that it's there.
Yes.
And you make peace with it and you recognize you don't have to go down the slide with it.
Exactly. Exactly. We don't have any advertisers here on the podcast because Sam and I have not reached that milestone yet. So instead, I get to tell you about my practice, Therapy for Women. We have 4 office locations, 3 in Pennsylvania in the Philadelphia area, 1 right outside in Collingswood, New Jersey, and also online in 42 states. Reach out to us at therapyforwomencenter.com.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
So that's where I think of myself in, you know, reading something like this or some of my clients or things like that. And it's the trauma and it's the anxiety of thinking, like getting perfectionistic about how you look or what you're thinking or why manifestation isn't working for you. And I get very frustrated too, because a lot of times the spirituality realm of this just becomes what's trendy. It's just like shadow work became a trendy hashtag. So now all these spiritual coaches are talking about hashtag shadow work. And then when something else becomes more popular, which IFS is, they're going to start rebranding themselves as that. And then the next thing will happen and they'll rebrand themselves as that. And none of them are actually trained in most of these things either. So they get to just kind of float around where the wind takes them.
Anybody can regurgitate information.
Yeah.
And I think even with everything you were just saying, the thought that was coming to me was this work is so individualized and nuanced. It's so nuanced.
Yeah.
And what makes me feel so discouraged is this stuff gets peddled as one size fits all because they don't have the breadth of understanding and professional experience required to preface that no two people are going to have the same outcome from this content.
Mm-hmm.
And this might not even be helpful content for you.
Yep.
You might not need to be doing the shadow work right now. You might need to be doing the really gentle, like acceptance-based, calm nervous system resetting work that allows you to get to a space where you could eventually delve into some of the shadow work. But everything is marketed as like, right now is the time. Yeah. You're having the negative thoughts. And so right now is the time. And again, like going back to what I said, like I have so many ideas for like these workbooks and things that I would like to do. And it's so frustrating to watch it all be co-opted
mm-hmm.
by people that they don't have the stories. They haven't witnessed mm-hmm. somebody go through this work. And I'm sorry, like just watching someone cry about something that makes them sad is not watching one do the work.
Yeah. And one thing I think about a lot is I was a yoga teacher. I don't teach yoga anymore. And I used to go to these trainings that essentially became like a Tony Robbins seminar.
God.
Where it was like very much forced on us that to be a yoga teacher, you needed to be self-actualized and you needed Jesus. To be the best version of yourself, which is hilarious now looking at it. It's like this was like a workout that most of us were doing, you know. But anyway, I digress. And what bothers me is now that I see it for what it is as a therapist is a lot of this stuff was created to force a reaction from people.
Ooh, like an emotional reaction?
Yes. Like when Ooh. You see people crying and they're processing and they're having an emotional reaction to something someone's saying, you can tell yourself like, look how transformative this is. Their lives are being changed from this experience. But you're not actually doing it to help them. You're doing it to kind of like poke at them a lot and get a big reaction and tell yourself that that's helping. But poking someone isn't always what they need and isn't always helping. And it like looking back, I see it totally differently as this wasn't them really doing a big service to people necessarily, though people absolutely got value out of it. And I was someone who did get value out of it, but I was also in therapy myself and in AA.
Right.
But it was, it just is very clear to me looking back that it was about the reaction. And this is sort of like the metaphor that keeps coming to my brain, even with, you know, we did a whole episode on Mel Robbins and the Let Them theory, is you can take tools of therapy.
Yes.
And use them. And there is nothing wrong inherently with that tool. That tool is helpful. But just like a scalpel is a specific surgery tool and someone else could use it, does not mean they know what to do with a scalpel. Right? It's the, when you become a surgeon, you're in school and you're in residency for so long to learn how to use the scalpel appropriately. But the magic is not the scalpel. I could be given a scalpel and told to do surgery and I couldn't obviously do it. So that's the problem, is we're framing CBT, shadow work, IFS.
DBT.
DBT, trauma work, right? The Let Them theory, right? Which you could say is DBT, as the solutions, when actually
they're tools.
They're tools, and the way someone uses them really is what matters in whether it's successful or effective.
That is such a fantastic metaphor for what is going on. And what I also love that you brought up the concept of like poking, because I think something that gets missed is the reaction you get from poking often isn't the honest reaction. That is the reactive reaction.
Yes.
That's not the authentic reaction. So yeah. There's a chance that you've hit a nerve that has not yet been processed.
Yeah.
And so someone simply weeping in response to something isn't necessarily – it's exposed that something's there.
Right.
But that's not necessarily like the real root of the issue.
Yeah.
Right? Like think of – you know, I'll use myself. I think of times that I've been triggered in my life.
Yeah.
And it leads to me crying.
Yeah.
Which, if you know me, me crying is not hard. I'll cry at anything. But if I think back to those moments where I had an emotional reaction to something, maybe there was something that was quote unquote poking. Mm-hmm. If I were to pause and think back to what was happening underneath that, mm-hmm. there was frustration. There was anxiety. There was anger, there was sadness, there was grief, right? And so the crying isn't really the work.
Yeah.
So I think going back to what you said, it's creating these like crafted emotional moments mm-hmm. that give the illusion that something is happening. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, something's happening. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I have had clients who have had the most insane, incredible, empowering breakthroughs that involved no tears.
Yes.
Involved no crying whatsoever.
Yeah.
In fact, the best work we did was after the crying, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. After you kind of have that initial like release of whatever that is that's pent up mm-hmm. and then they are able to regulate again. And then you can be like, whoa, what just happened?
Yeah.
But so many people think that initial reactive emotional response is the work. And you at this yoga retreat, it was being crafted to for everybody to feel like, oh my God, look, we're all crying and it's super emotional and we're all triggered. Mm-hmm. We're doing so much work.
Yes. And the insanity of it all too was like, right, if you get into the Salem witch trials, right, of like people do, or even, right, the idea sometimes that people say that like suicide is contagious, which, mm-hmm. right, is a whole nother topic. But we can be influenced by other people and other people's emotional reactions. So I think there was also something that happened at these retreats where people, like the first person would cry and then everyone would start crying and it would be this whole like, you know, you're in this whole experience. And then looking back, sometimes you're like, what was I even doing? And how do I even, mm-hmm. right? Just because you cut someone open doesn't mean it's helpful. Like if you don't stitch them back up, if you don't give them the tools to stay stitched up. I think the other thing is like, like you said, like the opening is easy. Anyone can do that. You can show a video,
yeah,
a disturbing video, and people have reactions to it.
Yep.
It is like the aftermath. It's the integration that's hard.
It's the stumbling.
Yeah.
The stumbling through the dark when you were standing in the dark, not moving, so you're fine. But then someone lights a match. Mm-hmm. And eventually the match gets lit to a candle. And then eventually the candle goes to a torch. You know, and then eventually, like, it you go and go and go. But you need someone that's, like, teaching you along the way how to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes therapists get a bad rap because the stories of the bad therapists are the ones that take off.
Yeah.
And I think people are like, well, why can't I just read a book, you know? And do this.
ChatGPT.
Why can't I just use ChatGPT?
For 2025, that is the number one way people are using it.
It's just, you put it so beautifully when you said the opening is easy. Part of the problem with humanity today is most people are walking around with just giant gaping open wounds.
Yep.
And they think that that means that they've done the work. Because they started open heart surgery and then stopped and woke up and got off the table and were like, I'll just talk to my computer.
And I want to say too, you know, like I have to say, we understand why.
Yes.
I understand why these journals exist. Yep. I understand the propensity to want to use them.
Yep.
It's the same that we talk about with the double-edged sword of self-diagnosis. And mm-hmm. I think it's hard because like we don't have a solution because – therapy is inaccessible to many.
Yeah.
It's insurance is a whole nother thing. And it is hard. So I understand the desire, the lack of access, the need to do something. So we're not shaming anyone who uses these tools.
No.
I think what we're saying is if you can't afford support or a therapist or something like that too, like be cautious in using them. Maybe don't just do a 30-day, you know, a lot of these coaches and books come with like challenges of how much to do every day. And yeah, I think we're just like trying to encourage people to take some caution with it.
Well, and I get that this feels empowering.
Yeah.
Like if this is the first bit of content that you're stumbling on about this and for the first time you feel seen, that's wonderful. And again, I think I've challenged myself sometimes on this whole idea of like the coaches and the content around all that because I'm like, well, if that's how someone gets their foot in the door to this work, like who am I to sit and say, no, it had to be from me or someone like me? Like this for me and just like you said, I really want to come from this place. This is not a sense that I'm sitting here saying I'm the only one that has all the answers.
Yeah.
Or that someone with letters behind their name is the only one that has the answers. This isn't about answers. This is about understanding how to actually support you through this and not just throw you some tools and say, like, build a house, right? Like, and you're like, well, how do I build a house? And then you just start, like, nailing shit together and you're like, well, this doesn't look right. And then you're living in a house and you're getting rained on and it's really complex and complicated and this isn't – for me, I don't put the responsibility with the consumers. I don't.
Yeah.
Because they are being marketed to and they're being sold a bill of goods in a lot of instances. Yeah. I blame a lot of these coaches that don't have more disclaimers, that don't have more acknowledgement of the fact that they are in fact not trained.
And a lot of these people are very conventionally attractive.
Very conventionally attractive.
And it is – I hate that spirituality is like intertwined.
Wrapped with beauty.
Yeah, of like, you know, I am – you know, I'm high vibration and I'm not holding on to weight and just look how much clearer I look because I've been doing the work and blah, blah, blah.
I think too what's so telling is that a lot of these coaches are at times telling on themselves because they're reaching for certifications.
Yeah.
And they're reaching for like, I'm this and I did this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, you didn't do what I did. Then I can tell you that much. Like, and Yeah, this I'm glad you brought that up because this has nothing to do with our clients or our patients or the consumers of this stuff. What we're expressing here is concern of the potential for harm. Mm-hmm. And again, I said it earlier, I empathize with the fact that a lot of the people selling this stuff and advocating for this stuff, they truly believe in their heart of hearts that they are like doing the Lord's work. Mm-hmm. And maybe in the right lens, they are. Maybe there's people who have already met with therapists and done some basic work that can then grab this tool in a different frame of mind and use it well. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's the majority of the people that are using these tools. But then that goes into a line of like, okay, so now are only people with letters behind their name allowed to create products? Like, that's not freedom. And I would be the first to die on that hill too. I can disagree with what you're doing, but you can do it.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, there is a backslide of trust in professionals.
Yes. Yes.
There's a backslide of trust in experts.
Yeah.
And people think, you know, someone who had life experience is more qualified than somebody who went to school. Never mind the fact that the person went to school because they had the life experience and then they went to school to figure out how to make sense of that. But
yeah, I just hate that the most dominant self-help books, podcasts, products are all run by people who are not mental health professionals.
Mm-mm.
Like literally, if you look at it across the board, I think the only one maybe is the holistic psychologist, but she abandoned her license.
Yeah. So that she could be a coach.
So that she could do this because she knew.
She could sell more.
And she knew that people would rightly come for her license because of the unethical stuff she was doing. But that's another episode.
Yeah, we could do another episode on that one. But and I think the other thing I want to challenge too is I'm sure mm-hmm. there could be some people that listen to this and they're like, well, then you're just bad marketers and you're just jealous and you're cranky. And it's like, no, trust me. If I really wanted to abandon my ethics, I could pump it out. Mm-hmm. Y'all wouldn't see me ever again because I would be in my estate in England living my best life. Like, it's not – I'm happy that people can find mm-hmm. success. What concerns me is that they targeted people in the most vulnerable space of mm-hmm. their life
mm-hmm.
and just threw them a bone, exactly like you said, threw them a scalpel and said, this is the tool that you need. I think the message that I would want people to take away from this is twofold. One, you get to do whatever you want.
Yep.
If you run out and you find that shadow work journal and you're like, shut up, Sam, this changed my life. I'm so happy for you. You get to do whatever you want with the information that you get in your life. I want you to feel empowered to do whatever it is that you feel you need to do to take care of you, to give yourself the best quality of life, and to feel content, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the goal. I don't even say happy, just content.
Yep.
The second part is, I also want you to have every ounce of support that you need as you work on these things. If you realize you're at a point in your life where you want to finally tackle the shame, you want to sort through the trauma, you want to make sense of why certain decisions in life have felt difficult for you, why you've felt paralyzed, mm-hmm. right, in your own life and have felt that you've sold yourself short or haven't taken advantage of opportunity, right? That is all like such valid work.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want you to have is a talented, capable, if we're keeping with the scalpel metaphor, physician standing right next to you, helping you navigate this and helping stitch you back up, knowing exactly where to make the right cuts, knowing where to stop, knowing when to take a break, knowing when to push so that you can actually live life differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you purchase this shadow work journal or if you've purchased any of these other self-help books and you're like, this was so helpful and, right, mm-hmm. there's another spectrum to the work. And it's okay to keep talking to a therapist. It's okay to have this resource over here. It's okay to do all of this, but I just would really advocate for you having someone next to you that can really help you sort through this.
And we all have our own biases.
Yes.
And like, that is one thing I can say therapists are trained on, mm-hmm. is how to sort their own biases from things. And we can't even do that to ourselves if we're trained in it. So it's extremely unlikely, especially when you're doing something like shadow work, which is like looking at hidden parts of yourself. Mm-hmm. It's extremely hard to be unbiased about yourself.
I'm glad you brought up bias, because I think maybe we could highlight that a little bit more. Mm-hmm. The concern with bias with this work comes in where if you have someone helping you through it, there is a chance that they will be leading you to a particular outcome, regardless of whether or not you want that outcome. But that is because this person next to you thinks that their way is the only way and their way is the right way. And you need to bend to that. And that part of the work is actually bending to what it is that this other person wants. Mm-hmm. Therapists, some of them are crappy, just like in every industry. We're not talking about the shitty ones. Okay, the ones like me and Amanda, the practice, and the ones that we're friends with, we have training in being able to check our countertransference, which is a really fancy word for bias, our countertransference in session to be able to say, am I bringing this up because I want to bring this up? Or am I bringing this up because this is pertinent to their situation? And this is a bit of insight and information that is going to empower this person to make a decision that is best for them. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you right now, and I know, Amanda, you could say the same thing. I have had clients make decisions, mm-hmm. make changes, do things that in the back of my mind, I was like, this is not good. Mm-hmm. I don't like this. I wouldn't do this. I wouldn't do it that way. But that is not what the work is about. Mm-hmm. My work is about exploring with that other person what they feel is best for them. Yep. And going through the pros and cons and sitting with the natural consequences and figuring out where they've been, where they are, and where they want to go. And that is, I am out. Me and my personal life are out of that equation. Yep. And that is a level of training that is very specific and has to be honed iron in the fire with someone else managing mm-hmm. your training and supervising your work. And I'm sorry, with all of these coaches, I know you all mean the best. You didn't get that training. And that is what is so risky and often missing from a lot of this work.
Yep.
Is that insight of you get to make the decision that's best for you. Even if I'm sitting here going, I would never do that. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work for my life. Mm-hmm. It works for your life. And that is what I support and that is what I empower.
Yeah, I completely agree. Well, to give you all too, like a snapshot of how Sam and I kind of do these conversations, right? Sometimes we've gotten some feedback that we meander, we're not as organized as we could be. And we just want to say like that is by design. Sam and I don't have an outline. We don't, we do research independently, but we show up to the conversations on purpose in a conversation. It's not a script. We don't often know where we're going to land. And we do that to model not knowing, to model figuring it out, to model nuance. And yeah, that is the podcast. So we just want to be clear about that is the why behind it. If you want a summary of what we talked about, organized mm-hmm. nicely, sometimes with graphics, mm-hmm. all laid out, you should subscribe to our Substack because that's what we do on Substack. We take this conversation. Mm-hmm. We organize it. We make, you know, Canva graphics, all that, questions. So you should join us on Substack if you'd like that, because we do that for pretty much every episode. And then it's kind of like this great companion piece to the podcast.
We're really trying to empower people to understand that like these conversations were never meant to be easy and straightforward. And that's why, you know, we have this here on the pod as like introducing the topic. And then on the Substack, we really go in depth into it. So we would love to have you there.
Yep. nuanceneeded.substack.com.
And as always, if you could rate, review, share, subscribe, it would mean the absolute world to us. And we appreciate you.
We'll see you next week. Bye.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.